we got a whole life, a whole
exactly
routine that you are not a part of.
Right.
I miss my daughter's 8th grade graduation. I miss my son's football basketball games. And I was a coach. I missed his dance recital. Now, I had convinced myself that, as we do as black men, my role is to provide and protect.
Right.
Well, I was providing. They had the best of the best. They were in the right schools. I'm driving the Mercedes. We live in the right neighborhood. But I didn't know my kids. I didn't know my wife. They didn't know me. They knew me as a provider. The protector part was out the window. But the ego had made me convince myself that the more I could do for them, the more I could stack, then I was taking care of them. So they'll be okay. As I said, my kids are adults now, and I remember a really hard conversation I had with them, and they said, "Dad, we would have rather had you than the vacations, the cars, the clothes, any of that stuff." And I had to apologize to them, but I also had to say, I didn't know what I didn't know.
We'll discuss race and how it plays a factor, and how we didn't even talk about this topic because we were afraid.
A Black Executive Perspective.
We are coming to you live from the BEP studio for another thought-provoking episode of a Black Executive Perspective podcast, a safe space where we discuss all matters regarding race, culture, and those uncomfortable topics people tend to avoid. I'm your host, Tony Tidbit.
And I'm your co-host, Chris P. Reed. And before we get started into this episode, we want to remind you to check out our partners at Code M Magazine, whose mission is saving the black family by first saving the black man. Check them out at codemmagazine2ms.com.
Yes, definitely check them out. And check out today, right? You know, we typically celebrate success, titles, and promotions, but rarely do we talk about the costs. Roger Jefferson built an elite corporate career only to realize the higher he climbed, the more disconnected he became from himself, his family, and his purpose. Then everything changed. A near fatal stroke with just a 2% chance of survival forced him to confront a question most of us avoid. What is success really costing me? Well, this episode will explore burnout, isolation at the top, and the myth that achievement equals fulfillment, and how Roderick built his life around what truly matters: faith, family, friends, and fun. Roderick Jefferson, my brother, welcome to a Black Executive Perspective podcast.
Tony and Chris, welcome. I have been counting down all day to get on this with you two. I am so excited to be able to break it down, chop it up, throw out, drop some gems, and learn from both of you brothers as well.
Bro, just real quick before, your story is fantastic, and I thank you for coming on, because not only are Chris and I going to get some gems, but you're going to drop a lot of gems, and the audience is really going to enjoy and hopefully learn from this. So thank you, my brother.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Before we dive into this, because this is going to be a heavy one today, but tell us a little bit about where you currently reside, family, a little bit of background on you.
Absolutely. So I currently reside in San Francisco Bay Area, but I grew up down south, and I don't mean Southern California. I was born in Louisiana, and I grew up in Dallas, and then later moved out to California because my dad was military, and he sold us a dream. He said, "We're going to go to California," and we thought swimming pools, movie stars.
That's right. It's a place you want to be.
No.
Sound like Beverly Hillbillies.
It actually turned out to be more like Jed Clampett than it was the movie star. We got into the Central Valley, which is all agricultural. It was the first time that I had actually been close to a cow or smelled a cow that close. And, you know, it was a year later and we were still wondering, when are we going to get to California? Well, that tended to be where we landed. And then I went back down south, came back out here, and you know how the story goes. I was getting ready to go over and play pro basketball, met a girl 35 years later. We are still happily married most days. Right, we all know it's not unicorns and rainbows.
That's just part of the game, right?
Yeah,
exactly.
I've got two kids, older kids, 36 and 27, and I just got my two-year-old granddaughter who just turned 22, just turned two recently.
Right. Two going on 22, right?
Oh, man. And she's got a lot of her mama in her, too.
There it is. There it is. That's your fault. So let me ask you this.
I did the spoiling, so I have to deal with what comes out of it, too.
That's the beauty. I've heard from my mom and in-law. That's the beauty of grandparenting is that, you know, you can get it all off and then they can go.
Oh, yes. I can hit her up with Oreo cookies and get her hopped up on sugar and then send her to her mom. And then she came in and she's like, wait, you let her eat anything. You let her do whatever you want to. And I saw a reel the other day on Instagram, so I had to throw it at my daughter. I was like, look, don't try to compete where you don't compare. This is a different world. This is grandpa here. This ain't dad.
That's right.
It's a good point.
That's right. So let me go beyond, you know, the family things and the things that ground you and anchor you. Let's talk about your career and some of the migration that you had in that regard, because I know you said you went back to the South and came back to the West and things of that nature. Was the career a migration pattern as well, or how did that work out for you?
It was. Thankfully, I've been here on the West Coast for most of the time when I'm not in the air and moving around. Now, I have been blessed to have, on one side, an incredible Disneyland career. It really was. I started out in sales back at AT&T, right? I started out with a Fortune 100 and did well there as inside sales, as a BDR, got promoted to AE, did well, went to President's Club a couple of times, got promoted to, you guessed it, sales leader. I actually turned it down and they thought I was crazy. But what I realized early on was that I loved the process of selling more than I did taking down big deals. So what I did is I went to my SVP and I said, I've got a proposition for you. What if I could do two things? I could use the basic templates that I had created for me to get to President's Club, and I could spread that out across the region. And most importantly, what if I could get more people going to President's Club than you had budget for? He said, then you got a new job. I was like, all right then. So I took on my first training role, and I mean true training. Just stand and deliver. And it was nothing over the top, I didn't think, but, you know, it was successful and people were working. As I fast forward, I realized that training was just a component of things. So about 20 years ago, I created a nomenclature, and I'm blessed to say it's now a part of every large and even smaller enterprise company now that we call sales enablement. And frankly, I was being a smartass, I'm not going to lie. I was talking to my head of sales at the time, and he came to me, we were doing a one-on-one, he said, you know what, we're discounting way too much. I need you to throw training at it. We've got people that don't know how to handle discovery and qualification. Throw training at it. I've got managers, not leaders, and I said, let me guess, throw training at it. And I looked at him, and I don't know where this came from. In the moment, I said, no, sir, you train animals, you enable people. And I say, and now here's where it gets good. He says, what does enablement mean? Oh, I had to tap dance. But you know how we do. And I really thought it through and I gave him where it was. And that has become now what was sales enablement has now become revenue enablement. So along the way, I got up to the ranks of VP, then SVP at Oracle, eBay, HP, Oracle, Salesforce, Marketo. I call myself the black unicorn of Silicon Valley. Because, and it's not arrogantly said, I don't know someone else. I wish I would have, so that I could have gone through this thing not solo, right? Another brother that looks like us that went through that. Now, that's wonderful. I was flying around in jets and helicopters and the whole nine, having lunch with kings and queens, even had lunch with President Obama. But Tony, as you said, there's a downside to that too.
Well, yeah, buddy. So number one, thanks for sharing. And we want to definitely get into, look, I don't want to, you know, segue, it's like we want to get into the downside, but we want to hear the whole story because obviously, as you were saying, you've built a career starting from an SDR, which most people, inside salesperson, calling for leads and stuff to that nature, right? All the way up, man. And like you said, going all over the world and obviously meeting the president and all that type stuff. All that being said, bro, you're still busy now. You've built a big business, right? You're still traveling and speaking at a lot of different engagements. So why did you want to come on a Black Executive Perspective podcast, talk about this topic?
Well, there's a couple of reasons. One, I'm out here doing this a lot, but I'm not doing it with us. That's one side. The other thing is, I get a chance to come into what I feel like is a safe space. And I need to be able to say some things that we say in our circles that needs to be heard and shared with the rest of the world. Because we not only have a unique perspective, but we have unique experiences that if you don't look like us, you will never understand it and you will never fully be able to imbibe it and understand it. And for those that are allies and others, I want you to hear a couple of things. One, first of all, thank you. And secondly, don't you dare stop what you're doing right now. Because in today's environment, we need allies. We need each other more than we ever had. And if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it here.
Well, listen, my brother, we appreciate you coming on to do it here. So it seemed like you chomping at the bit. You ready to talk about it?
Sure. Let's talk about it.
All right, my brother. Let's talk about it.
So I like to, as a historian, I like to go into the early times and the origin stories of all superheroes, right? And so for me, you and Tony spent decades in sales. So you got in front of people, you presented things, and you made them realize the service that you had is what they needed. I spent decades buying. So I was always a buyer. Now, the beauty of me being a black man and being a buyer is I had the money. So that gave me a leg up, you know what I mean? Working for Verizon, AT&T, other companies, I had the bread, so you had to come to me. But you guys had to navigate a situation where you're going into places you may not have been wanted, not because of the product, not because of the service, but because of how you look.
Absolutely.
How were you able to mitigate that, navigate that, and excel in that in your perspective now looking back?
Well, there are a few things that happened. First and foremost, I'll say is, I had some phenomenal mentors. Now, some looked like me, most of them didn't. And what I learned from the mentors that did not look like us was how to play chess instead of checkers. And what I mean by that is, when they say this, this is how you respond. When they say that, this is when you act like you didn't even hear the question, you keep it moving. And then there was the times where when they ask you this question, you answer the question that you know they're really asking you behind the question that they're asking. So that first and foremost, I realized there's a difference between mentors and sponsors. And I've been blessed to have both. Mentors are someone that speaks about you. They can get you in the front of the line. They can put your resume in somebody in front of the right person. They can open some doors. Where sponsors speak for you. They're talking about you in rooms that you don't even know exist. More or less have an opportunity to step into. So I had some great mentors and some great sponsors. That was one. The other piece is I grew up in being a military kid. I grew up in an eclectic world. So I learned early, we'll call it what it is, how to code switch. Now, that does not mean that it wasn't who I really was. It really comes back to what you were saying about Tony and I earlier. Know your audience. You can't have every conversation the same way. The same nomenclature, everything. Look, the way when I go home and we're playing spades and tonk and bid whiz and we're playing dominoes, I can't have that conversation in the boardroom. But if I take the boardroom that's me home, that's going to create a whole different kind of problem.
So buddy, you sell out. You know, I'm sorry to mean to interrupt you, but you know what happens. You a sell out. You a token.
Oh, absolutely.
All right. Those are the brothers. That's what they're calling you, right?
Absolutely. Right? Django, the whole nine. But what they didn't realize was you said it earlier, Brother Chris, and that is I had a superpower that corporate didn't understand. Right. And I go back to what Jay-Z said, right? I infiltrated all the corporate dudes. They call plays. I call audibles.
I love it,
and
buddy.
What I mean by that is, growing up in the projects, in the hood, I could compare that world to corporate, and it just instantly hit me. And let me break this down just for a quick second. When you think... I'm just be honest, my family comes from a long line of folks that's moving weight, whether it's legal or not, well, we can discuss that later. But just for the analogy, when I look at corporate, I see individual contributors. In the hood, I see corner boys. When I see middle management, I see managers and directors. When I look in the hood, I see cats that are moving things around. When I look at the top, I see VPs in corporate, I see block captains in the hood. When I look at corporate, I see CEO. When I look at the hood, I see boss. But here's the upside to all of those. And here's where it really connected the dots for me. And that is, they both have to understand their buyer. They have to understand what makes them above their competitor. They have to have an elite product. They have to know how to not only sell, but also how to get them, we call re-up, right? But in corporate, it's renewals, cross-sells, and upsells. The only difference is one is legal and one isn't, but it's the same game.
Right.
And so when you take those and you can meld those together, you're untouchable.
Let me ask you this.
Let me go. Everybody wants to know now.
This is good.
Absolutely. So, in a similar dynamic as you, the one thing that I mentor to young brothers about is the fact that you have to be on at all times at the crib.
All times.
When you get these papers and you get these credentials and things behind your name, you have to be proficient from a production perspective, but you can't be intimidating from them being some, you know what I mean? So it's
100%.
Because then they think
I'm better than.
Thank you.
So when I go home,
so
I always
did you do that
to my cousins and my brothers. I say, look, I'm going to keep it a buck with you. I had never thought that I was better than or above any of y'all. My dreams were just bigger than the hood. And I was blessed to be able to be put in situations where I could fulfill and bust my hump, and a whole lot of prayers from ancestors and mama and cousin them, right, to get me there. So you know what? Instead of hating me for doing it differently, I applaud you for not giving up the same way that I want you to applaud on my side. Because look, we're both going through the same things. It's just coming from a different angle.
Here's the thing though, bro. I hear you. Right. And you know, I mirrored a lot of that. Okay. And Chris probably mirrored a lot of that. Okay. At the end of the day though, and you talked about mentors and sponsors, which I totally agree with, right? However, I didn't have a mentor to say, look at corporate America like the hood. Okay. So, you know,
but
I didn't
I'm
have nobody
mentor
saying,
now, though,
no, 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 no. But no, 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 no. What I'm saying is that I figured that out myself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that's what I want to dive into is because, and this is where, and I'm glad we're talking about this because this is where, especially for the, you know, the black and brown community, this is where they have to start looking at their brothers and sisters that are in corporate America. And instead of, you know, being jealous of them or envious of them and calling them all type of names and sellouts, and we just got finished talking about it, because that's really what they, you know, you should be looking at them and saying, wow. Especially if they're communicating and they, to your point, they're not coming like they're better than anybody. They're just surviving in another world, right? So they can grow in that world, right? But when they come back home, they're still the same person and the same peeps that you were hanging with and this and that and the whole nine yards. They're still your people. So, but what we do is that we diminish them because they're, like you just got finished saying, right? We have dreams that we're trying to accomplish, right? And to accomplish them, it's not, and I love what you said about it, it's not code switching. It's being able to come up with audibles, right? So in other words, instead of me sitting back at, we're chameleons, okay?
Absolutely.
We can play in and out of worlds, right? And we don't get a lot of credit for that from our own brothers and sisters, right? But we can play in, we can speak this language, and then we can move over here and speak this language, and that goes back to what you were saying about your audience. So real quick, how did you, because, you know, at the end of the day, and I would love to hear Chris's point of view too, nobody taught me that. You just kind of figured it out. All right.
Yes,
and because that was the way that you were going to navigate and going back to playing chess, not checkers. Speak a little bit about how you figured that out.
Like you, growing up, I watched everything around me. And my mama used to say, you learn how to or you learn how not to. Either way you learn, just one hurts more. Right? And so I was, as I was coming up throughout the game of corporate, I realized that I was coming up similarly like my cousins. It was just in a different environment. And once I put that together in my mind, I was like, wow. They're really, I don't care where you're at, the game doesn't change, the arena changes.
Right.
That's what changes. The industry changes, right? The environment changes. So if I could bring both of those environments and meld them together, I go back to what you said, Chris. That was a superpower. That was something that very few brothers and sisters know how to do. I don't think I'm the best at anything. I don't think I'm the smartest at anything. What I am is someone that is a constant and consummate learner. And I don't care if you're the janitor, you're the CEO, you're that cat on the corner. If I can learn from you, I'm going to listen to what you got. Because you said it as we started the conversation. Gems come from every angle. It's a matter of whether you catch them and put them in your pocket or you let them drop and hit the ground.
Here's the thing, though, my brother.
Where I wanted to miss out on any of those gems.
And you didn't. Right. And this is where I want to go to. Right. Because you rose. Right. Not just at one organization, multiple organizations.
If you like what you hear and want to join us on this journey of making uncomfortable conversations comfortable, please subscribe to a Black Executive Perspective podcast on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hit subscribe now to stay connected for more episodes that challenge, inspire, and lead the change.
All right. You turned and coined this new phrase, sales enablement, which every company now has. All right. That
I just wasn't right? smart enough to trademark it, though.
No, I get it. I get it. That's the only thing you didn't do. All right. But at the end of the day, you were able to rise and you were able to be effective. Right. But at the end of the day, as we spoke about a little bit, there is a price to be paid. Now, look, here's the thing. We just got finished talking about how to navigate. Okay, and how we could dive in the different worlds, yeah. right? And be able to communicate, blah, 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 and still be able to have success on both sides, right? But there's still a price to be paid. So speak a little bit about the price, my brother.
Yeah, I am still an A++, and I say that with no apologies, right? I'm still striving because good enough is never going to be good enough for me. And that's just me personally. But I have learned to step back a little bit. Actually, I won't say I learned. Got it, and the universe taught me. So I'm flying around. I'm doing my thing, dipping, dabbing, in and out, like you said. In one 18-month period, I was in London, Paris, Geneva, Sao Paulo, Rio, Toronto, Beijing, Hong Kong, Sydney. Now, you do the math. How much was I actually home? I was the guy that flew home, helped the kids a little bit with the homework, got my dry cleaning, and I was back in the air again. Until I came home from a two-week stint on the road throughout Europe and Asia-Pac. And I remember it was a Thursday, and I said to my wife, baby, I've been on the road for 2 weeks eating hotel food. I just want some greasy tacos. My son looked at me, and he said, Dad, Thursday is shake and bake night. Now, yeah, it just hit you. That's not just wisdom from a child. That was saying, Dad, we got a whole life, a whole
exactly.
routine that you are not a part of.
Right.
I miss my daughter's eighth grade graduation. I miss my son's football basketball games. And I was a coach. I missed his dance recitals. Now, I had convinced myself that, as we do as Black men, my role is to provide and protect.
Right.
Well, I was providing. They had the best of the best. They were in the right schools. I'm driving the Mercedes. We live in the right neighborhood. But I didn't know my kids. I didn't know my wife. They didn't know me. They knew me as a provider. The protector part was out the window. But the ego had made me convince myself that the more I could do for them, the more I could stack, then I was taking care of them. So they'll be okay. As I said, my kids are adults now, and I remember a really hard conversation I had with them, and they said, Dad, we would have rather had you than the vacations, the cars, the clothes, any of that stuff. And I had to apologize to them, but I also had to say, I didn't know what I didn't know. I was doing what I thought was the right thing until I was in LA. I'm a professional keynote speaker now. I was in LA preparing for a keynote. I had my team with me. We were out at dinner the night before. We had walked the hotel. We had sampled all the food, all the stuff that we do, right? And I remember looking up from the table and my team was, there was a scared, shocked look on everybody's face because I had woke up in the middle of a sentence where I had fallen asleep. That's not like me. I stay on top of details. That's the one thing that I am very proud of. And they looked at me and they said, are you okay? And I tried to play it off. Maybe I got narcolepsy. Maybe I'm just getting old, right? And I said, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to go back to the room. I'm going to get some sleep, relax. But I remember walking back. I felt like I was walking in quicksand. And I remember having to tell myself, lift your left leg, lift your right foot, lift your left. And I said, something's wrong. Because I wasn't that far from the restaurant to my room. I got back to the room. I, you know, checked my notes, checked my presentation, prepped. I said, I'm going to lay it down like every other night. I wake up the next morning. And when I'm on the road, my wife and I always jump on a call. Hey, let's compare notes. What's going on? How are the kids? What's going on here over there? Here's what I'm up to. But what I heard sounded like what you hear now. What she heard was gobbledygook. And so she said, thankfully, she had a friend who had recently had a stroke. And she walked me through stroke protocol. She's in San Francisco Bay Area. I'm in LA. She said, count to 10. Come on now. 1, 2, 7, 43, 16, 59. She said, say your ABCs. Like, really? A, B, L, Q, X, T, P, R, Y, O. And she said, baby, jump on FaceTime. I need to see your face to see if it's drooping. We get on. I didn't look right. And I'm stuttering so bad, she could barely hear what I'm saying. Thankfully, she called my director, Tim Carlson. Mad love to you for helping to save my life that day, man. And every time I talk, and from here on out, I'm going to say your name. He takes me to the emergency room. Turns out I had had a stroke while I was asleep. 98% of sleep stroke victims never wake up. That's miracle number one. They take me to the emergency room. We are in a very low minority environment, I'll say, right? They checked my brain. They checked my heart. They released me 90 minutes later from the emergency room while I'm mid-stroke and I'm still stuttering. That was also the day that I'm supposed to be flying home. I go to the airport. I drop as I'm walking to get in line at Southwest. They put me in a wheelchair, rolled me onto the plane. I get to Oakland, and my wife and my son are waiting for me. My son takes my car, goes home. My wife rushes me to the emergency room. I don't remember the first 4 days of that, so this is based on what my wife told me that I'm about to say. The first thing the doctor said to her was, your husband's a miracle because mid-stroke, cabin pressure, altitude, and I learned early in life that I have a really big heart, right? In actuality, it's called hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. If you remember Reggie Lewis or Hank Gathers, I have what they died from. And so I don't have any blockage, but just the normal heart squeezes at about 55 to 65% on average. When it gets down to 20%, cardiac arrest, you're dead. They wheeled me into the emergency room. I was at 22% heart function. They gave me a 2% chance to live. They rushed me into stroke protocol. I'm in, and now bear in mind, this was just 4 years ago that we're talking about right now. So think of where we were. We were in COVID protocol. So nobody could come see me. At this point, I'm progressively getting worse. I've gone snow blind. I'm not dark. I'm bright. Like there's a light in my eyes all the time. So I have no concept of day and night, so now my sleep pattern is just messed up. But it gets worse. Now I can't talk at all. Now they're feeding me Ensure, and they're feeding me through a tube, and I'm losing weight like crazy. Worse than that, my entire left side is paralyzed. I can't move my arm or my leg. And remember, I get paid to talk. Turns out that, this is how I know God has a sense of humor. My stroke was due to a clot in my heart that floated up and landed in my brain, in the middle of my speech center. Doctor said a millimeter, northeast, south, or west, we wouldn't be having this conversation. Now, I wish I could say that was the worst of it. Fast forward, I'm in the hospital for about 2 weeks now. Now I'm having a really hard time breathing, and I see lights flashing, machines going crazy, and I hear code blue, and it's my room number. Now, they all come rushing in. I go from beep, 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 beep. I'm flatlined. I'm dead. Now, if you've ever been to the dentist and they give you the laughing gas or they give you Twilight, it sounds like Charlie Brown's teacher in the room. You can hear everybody moving around and talking, but you can't really hear and clearly understand it. I didn't leave the room. I floated up to the corner of the room. I'm looking down on my body as the doctors and nurses are sucking fluids out of me. They're doing chest compression on me. Now, bear in mind, I said this was 4 years ago. I looked to my left, and my mama is floating right next to me. My mama died in 1999. She came back to take care of her baby. And I said, okay, mama, good and faithful servant, I've done everything I can. I'm ready to go home. And she said, no, baby. I've got a couple things to tell you. First, they're going to figure out what's going on, and you're going to be okay. And secondly, you got to change everything that you know to be right now. And part of it is that job that you've been doing. Everything you put all that work into, it has to go away today if you want to go back. I'm not going to lie to my mama. So I said, yes, ma'am.
So hold on, bro. So I just want to make sure I'm on the same page. This is why you guys both floating. All right, you and your mother, y'all floating, and she having this conversation like, hey, look, you got to change, and then you sitting back while they pumping on you. Or they doing everything, you saying, yeah, mama, don't worry, I'm going to take care of it, blah, 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 blah. Is that what we're hearing?
Okay. Exactly what we're hearing.
Okay, okay.
So now I feel this rush, and I'm sucked back into my body. Now I'm laying flat. I'm looking up at a bright light in the room. Because again, I'm snowblind and I can't see anything yet. But I can tell you, I can feel the chest compressions and my chest is killing me. And then I hear the one word that no human ever wants to hear. Clear.
Oh, damn.
He's coming down to hit me with the paddles. And I'm thinking to myself, Lord, no, please, please don't let this happen. Now bear in mind, I can't move my entire left side. And I go from beep to beep. Beep, beep, and I'm back. Thank God that man was on my right side. I grabbed his hand as he was coming down to hit me. At that point, they go into stroke protocol. They bring in the emergency response team. We go through a whole bunch of other things, and I'm back. But after that comes the real work. Speech therapy, physical therapy, occupational therapy. I had to start all over again. How do I tie my shoes? How do I button my thing? How do I use a real spoon? Now, looking at me, just 4 years later, and listening to me, people would say, I would never know you had a stroke. And that's probably the best and the worst thing of having a stroke, is because I look normal. But let me let you in on a little secret. I take 14 pills a day just to stay balanced and be the guy that you're looking at. Because I take those pills out, and I am back to that same person all over again. But I am incredibly blessed to still be here. And what I didn't say is there's one other thing that my mom told me. And she said, my job is to go back and touch what she called the invisible people. And that's the people that work at the waiters, the waitresses, the valets, and even those people that just look sad in the grocery store. She said, my job is to give them one smile that they may not have gotten that day, and you may actually save their life. Well, I went back with that in mind, and that is my purpose, but I took it one step further. I wrote a book on this. That's now become a bestseller. But what I did with that book is not just about my story. That's probably 15% of the book. The rest of the book, I wrote an entire chapter thanking and validating caregivers, because they're the ones that do all the hard work and nobody ever says thank you. They're just, that's what you're supposed to do. It's your mama, it's your daddy, it's your cousin, it's your child. I said for an entire chapter, as many ways as I could, thank you for what you're doing. But the other thing I did was I made sure that I gave a resource component for everybody that is not just a caregiver, but that reads it. Now, bear in mind, most people say, oh, that's okay. I mean, I'm not going to ever have a stroke. This was my second stroke. I didn't even know I had the first one.
Oh, dang.
And I've learned now in working with the American Stroke Society that one out of every four humans on the planet over the age of 25 will incur a stroke in their life. It may have felt like you were just a little dizzy, you were off. It may have felt like a migraine. It may have felt like I'm just a little tired. If you start feeling these things, especially I'm going to say this to black men right now, because for some reason we want to be hard-headed and won't go to the doctor. Oh man, I'm okay. I'm just going to brush that off. I'm good. No, it will kill you. And not everybody gets a second chance like I have.
There's no question. There's no question. Chris, go ahead, buddy.
Yeah, I got two things. First of all, I appreciate you and salute you for having imbued and put so much human equity into people that Mrs. Jefferson and Tim was there for you when you needed. A lot of people that's bosses and they have situations where they tunnel vision as far as success, they throw so much shade at people along the way climbing that ladder,
yeah,
that when those moments come, they don't have nobody to turn to because they was worried about that ladder. That ladder can take you to the hospital. So yeah. So congratulations to you for that. Another reason why this kind of hits me today specifically is one of my oldest friends, we've been cool since we was nine. Okay, they moved in from California to Illinois. And his mom had a stroke 3 months ago. Unlike you, taking the 14 pills and doing what you needed to, she died this morning.
Mm.
Okay, she was paralyzed on the left side. He hit me up at 3-something.
It was sorry, like, man, buddy.
My mom, sorry, my mom buddy. Died. But I'm saying all that to say, what was the exact moment when you realized you had to make permanent changes? Because it's like anything, you got to be committed to this if you want to still be here and look like you do and speak like you speak and be able to give this testimony thereafter. So when was you able to say, you know what, I'm going to take this focus and narrow it down and focus it in and do a prism, you know, perspective on changing my life?
In all seriousness, I've been a mama's boy my whole life. And at 60, if she was still alive, I would still be a mama's boy. When my mama looked me in the face and said, you have to change or you don't get to go back, that changed everything.
Gotcha.
Everything. And when I came back, I had the opportunity to go into other positions in companies, making a lot more money than I made. But I'll tell you, here's another thing that changed for me. The more I became successful, and you said you kind of hinted to this earlier, Tony. The further I moved up the ladder, the more power I became. I loved myself probably a little too much. And the more money I made, the more successful I was, the less I liked myself. I realized I had lost that empathy that helped me get to that level. I was that guy for a while. Tony, Chris, that you were just talking about. I came up the ladder a couple of times and burned the rungs behind me.
Yeah.
Right? You ain't getting the yeah. You're not pulling me down. But yeah, you know what happened? So, if I can say honestly, the thing that brought me back was I talked to some of the folks that were on my teams prior to me being an SVP, and they all, to individuals, every single one of them asked me a single question. What happened to that guy that used to care about all of us, that checked on us, that knew all of our kids' birthdays and all that? And I had to admit to myself and to them that when I got to SVP, I created a character that I called RJ. RJ was the quintessential SVP. He'd had the right suits, the right shoes, he drove the Mercedes, he did the woo woo woo, right? But I also realized that I hated that guy. But it was what I thought I was supposed to be and what I emulated of the other folks, especially that didn't look like us, that could get away with that. I couldn't get away with that. I was the one that at SVP, I got fired for being too good and for speaking up. When other folks didn't rock the apple cart, they just let things go, and they're sitting on M's right now, multiple M's. I was like, hey, you know, if we should do this, we should try that. That's not what they wanted to hear. They wanted me to play the game. And I wasn't even cognitive enough to look at it and go, if you would just shut up and play this game, you could get in, get out, and you would be sitting on generational M's. So at that point, I said, you know what? I heard my mom and my voice, her voice in my head again. Baby, you either learn how to or how not to. But one of them hurts a lot more, doesn't it? That's when everything changed. Now my motto is three things. IQ plus EQ plus AI. That's how I'm living right now. In that order.
So, buddy, dive into that, because the other thing you talk about is the four F's, right? Faith, yes. Family, friends, and fun. Okay. And, you know, one of the things is, and Chris asked the question, it's in, you know, what, you know, what changes you had to make and stuff to that nature. And I sometimes I think, and but we know that some people don't do it, right? If my mother came and told me, and I'm almost dying, and I can remember them, you know, putting, you know, saying clear, there's nothing else. That's good enough for me. Yeah. All right, you know what I'm saying? So if they said don't even use the bat, I'm not doing nothing. All right, because at the end of the day,
that
experience.
All I can say is I'm with that.
Yeah, exactly. So But all that being said, though, we know people that still would try to live that life, right? Yeah, me and Chris, I talked about somebody like that not too long ago, right? That still would try to live it, right? But all that being said, dive into the EQ, IQ, AI, and then talk about the four F's. Because to be fair, you lost your way, okay? Because you didn't even know it was shake and bake night.
Exactly.
Okay, and then more importantly, you said that you know, you turned into the rotten. I'm paraphrasing, the rotten scoundrel.
Yeah, right? I did. No, you're right.
So speak about EQ, IQ, AI, and then the four F's.
Absolutely. On the IQ, EQ, AI piece, I watch trends. I watch what's going on. It's no surprise of where we're going, right? I believe that IQ and the EQ is important because IQ will give you content, right? And cognitively. AI will give us content beyond any of us on this planet. But without that EQ, you have no context. So you can't just let it own you and drive you. You still need that human component, that empathy, that personability. Right? Because last I checked, people still buy from people. But what I've learned is how to use AI as a business partner now, not as a research tool, not as a toy, not as writing content for me. Mm-mm. I have conversations with it. Now, I think the package is starting to come together, and I am working smarter, not harder. And how that relates to my four F's. Faith, family, friends, and fun. The first F of faith, I grew up, my dad was a minister before he passed. So I always, that was my foundation. But just like everything else in corporate, I started playing church. And look, I'm a PK. I earned it on both sides of the street. I'm not even going front. No funk. There was plenty of smoke on this side that I've done. Right?
That's part
Thankfully,
of life.
There was no social media, so right, my lawyer right, says right, as long right, as right. I say allegedly, I'm absolved. Right. And so what I realized was faith is what happens when nobody else is watching. My mama again used to say all the time, faith is never tested in good times. It's when you have nothing but faith, you find out whether you have it or if it's just a story that you tell people to make you sound good. When it comes to family, I wouldn't be standing here without them. Like you said, my wife saved my life. There's no question about it. Because being hard-headed like I was, I probably would have gone on, did my speech, and probably been like Hank Gathers and Reggie Lewis and died right there on the podium, right there on the stage. I don't want to mess somebody's day up like that. No. My kids, my conversations, my friends all mean more to me than they ever did. Because when I was at my worst, they were there. I don't call everybody friend anymore. That is a very, very special title that I put on people. And it's not because they deserved it and because I'm this, that, and the other. It's because they've earned it and they've proven to me.
Right, right.
Because everybody that's on your team ain't on your squad. Mm-hmm. And we know that. The fun piece. 2 weeks before I had the massive stroke, I was talking to my daughter. She's like, Dad, you have done so much, and I'm so proud of you. You've been around the world. You've touched this. You've spoken in 15, 16 countries. You sat down with Obama and talked basketball for an hour and a half at lunch. But what do you do just for you? What do you do for fun? And I looked at her and I said, what is this fun you speak of, child? Right? Half jokingly. But then I had to realize, and I'm going to quote Mama again. Mama used to say, little pictures have big eyes. And I didn't understand what that meant until I got older. They see everything you're doing, and it's record, rewind, play. I needed to show them what I had been preaching this whole time about taking time for yourself and not burning the candle at both ends. So, got a bocce ball court put in the backyard. Got a little puppy. We're out walking. Started doing date night with my wife again. My kids, my oldest daughter now, her and her husband and the baby, actually just got a home here in town 7 minutes from us. I catch that baby every week. The only thing I asked for Christmas was a baby car seat. There was nothing else I wanted. Because that means grandpa can go get her anytime I want. And you know how my daughter got me? She named her after my late mom. And she said, so anytime you're looking at her, you're seeing legacy of G-Mama. And so it doesn't take much for me to stay focused. But I want to say and sum up everything that I've said on this entire episode of our conversation. The biggest change is I killed RJ. I killed the character. When I'm posting on social media, when I'm talking to friends, when I'm having conversations, when I'm on the stage, I have one goal and one goal only. I may not be able to make your life easier, but my goal is that when you walk away from a conversation with me, life is a little better. If I can do that, then mission accomplished. I can look at my mama and say, mission accomplished.
You did something that's quintessentially harder for us to do because of our avenues and our measures of success that we're exposed to growing up. Mm-hmm. And so when I coach folks, or when I talk to athletes especially, or former athletes, one of the things that I end up getting caught up on with them is they haven't yet mourned the death of the man that they thought they were supposed to be.
Yeah, because they think they can still be that person.
They still think they can be that person.
Or they fail because they haven't become him yet.
How did you turn that switch and redefine what success meant? And what is the delta between what success was then? Because you still got to pay bills and take the wife on vacation. Like, come on, bro. You ain't give up everything. Rent your clothes. You know, tear your clothes off.
Went down to a Pinto. I'm driving the Nissan hatchback. Right?
They go to the lake. You got the Yugo.
Right? They're going to the lake instead of the pool in the back.
Exactly. Hey, my PG&E is not going to stay on because I smiled at him.
There it is. So how did you calibrate how much of you needed to mourn and get over, and how much of this chrysalis you had to come out of to become the man that they all appreciate, that we appreciate now, the author, the successful speaker? How did you actually reconcile with that? Because there does take a level of maturity and spirituality and everything in order to leave that behind.
A lot of prayer, first and foremost. I'm dead serious. Every day I start with the same prayer. Thank you, Lord, for waking me up, allowing me to see another day. But it also ends this way. May the world see more of you today and less
through me. Yeah.
Okay. That was the catalyst for the change right there. And I also realized that I was given a gift that very few have. I didn't just have a test. I have a testimony, and I have to go and live it, not just come out here and regurgitate it when I'm talking on the stage or when I'm having conversations. Because, again, testimony is what happens when nobody is watching. Does that mean I'm perfect? No, 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 no. Nowhere even close. But what I am now is more observant. I'm also more of a servant leader than I've ever been. And I'm also someone that is the first one to say, when I'm wrong, I'm sorry. And that is, to me, the biggest, most important three words on the planet next to I love you are, I was wrong.
Buddy, let me ask you this, because number one, thank you for sharing. Okay. And you're based on what you're saying in terms of what your mother told you to do, you're fulfilling that, right? Now look, like you said, nobody's perfect, right? There's no such thing, right?
No.
Here's the thing though, right? As our listeners are listening to this, watching this, they're probably awestruck. Their mouths are open, blah, 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 right? But let's go back to what Chris was saying. They're still trying to get to where you were, okay, when you was the SVP with the Mercedes and stuff to that nature, right? They're looking at, they're hearing the story and like, yeah, I get it. And, you know, God blessed them and my man was able to, you know, he was lucky or blessed or whatever, right? But that ain't going to happen to me. All right. And I still want to drive and go up this ladder. Right. And I work out. Hold on. I'm going to throw some other throwing stuff out here that I can hear them saying. I work out. I eat right. Right. I'm traveling. But, you know, that ain't going to happen to me. He must have been overweight. He must have been this. He was that. Right. Blah, blah, blah. So what would you say to those high performing professionals who still chasing success right now? They're hearing this story and they're like, wow, my man was blessed. He made it. Boom, boom, boom. But they're like, that ain't going to happen to me. And this is the reason why. What would you say to them?
I can show you better than I can tell you. First and foremost, right? And we all know what that means. But you know what? I want to give them something tangible that helped me get to where I am today, not just because it's my story, okay? First and foremost, I'm still A++. I'm the first to admit it. But what I did that really changed, that I believe anybody can do, every morning after my morning prayer, I come into my office. Before I look at my email, because once you do that, now you're in firefighting, not fire prevention mode. I have a whiteboard right in front of me. I write down four things on that board. Three things that I am going to do come hell or high water before I walk away from this laptop. And that fourth one is one thing just for me. Some days it's I'm going out just for a walk to get some sun on my face. Sometimes it's I'm just going to lay in my backyard and listen to the hummingbirds. Sometimes it's barbecue and Baskin Robbins. And don't treat that fourth thing as a cheat like you're on a diet. Because if you do, you're looking at it wrong. I want you to incorporate one thing every day just for you. Not for you and your significant other, for your kids, for anybody. Goldfish, whatever. Just for yourself. Because if you don't, your head will explode. Because it is hard being a black man in the world and in America right now. So if you don't turn off news, get a break from that. The other thing is, no phone after 7 o'clock p.m. Because it allows you to recharge your batteries. Don't bring it to the table when you're having dinner. Because we instantly do that. Right.
No, you're 100% right, my brother.
That dopamine hit ain't no joke.
There's no question.
And, why social media exists, because I believe while it's amazing, it's also made all of us less social.
Mm.
Right. So take a break from all of that. And if you can, find a hobby. I don't care if it's you want to go shoot the ball in the air. You want to go and you know, jump on your bike and head out, do what you do. You gotta have one thing just for you. And it's not selfish. I go and get my mani-pedi done. Say what you want to. I go and get my massages consistently. But you know what? I can tell the difference in me, in my attitude, in my approach, in my EQ when I do and don't do it. So start taking care of yourself. And it's not selfless, it's self-care.
Right.
You know what? It's funny because as you were saying all that, and this is a true story, I swear to God. My client hit me this morning and said, if you had to describe a dream scenario that you don't get to enact, what would it be? And my response was 3 days, nobody. No phone, no nothing, no just me being able to do whatever I want to do by myself.
Yeah.
And she responded, why not? And I responded, kids.
Mm-hmm.
One word, yeah. Kids. I have responsibilities
that prohibit
me from just falling off the earth. You dig what I'm saying? But what you're saying now is self-care is not selfishness.
Absolutely.
And I think that those two selves are always competing. They're always competing. Absolutely.
And like I said, I'm not trying to say this will work for everybody, but I'll tell you, if you do it consistently, just do it for a month, you will be a whole different person because, one, you won't be pinballing all over the place professionally trying to do everything at once. I have two stickies right here. One says one thing at a time, and it's right here. And the other one says you can do anything, not everything.
I love it. Outside of that, my brother, final thoughts. What's the one message? You just left a lot of gems. And to be fair, even if you didn't, just your story and how you were able to rebound. And then more importantly, not just from a physical standpoint, but also from a spiritual standpoint, as well as you were talking, now RJ is gone, right? And so now from an EQ standpoint, but what's the one thing you want to leave with everyone, my brother, that you want them to walk away based on you sharing today?
We all thank you for that. We all say that we want to stay here for as long as we can, whatever your reason is, whatever your why is, never forget your why. Because as soon as you take your eyes off of your why, your job, whether you're an entrepreneur or corporate America, has won because now you're focused on what you do versus who you are.
Mm.
And the last thing I want to say is this. If you don't take time to take care of your body will shut down. And it is not anything you will ever ask for Christmas or birthday. Trust me.
Mr. Jefferson, I appreciate you giving us the game on quality over quantity.
Thank you.
And I'm going to ask you now, how can a Black Executive Perspective podcast support and help you? Where can people get more of this game from you? How can we reach out and learn how to be more like you? And I'm being as sincere as possible because we don't have this type
we don't
of
do this
vulnerability.
Enough.
We do not, bruh. We do we not. It's rub some dirt on it and stop complaining. And the ancestors to be mad at you. And you know, you ain't sweaty. You ain't
some dirt on it.
Exactly. You sitting in central air talking all crazy. But no, for real, because you've been there. You've been from here to there and you allow for yourself to get over yourself at an advanced age. Like, usually, I'm too old to, and that's what happened with my buddy and his mom's. She was like, I'm too old to change my ways and this, that, and then look up, and now he's sad, and I'm consoling him because she didn't peep the scene like you did. But thanks to your mom, your wife, all these other people. But where can they find out how to get more of your story, more of you, more of these opportunities?
Thank you for that opportunity. I appreciate it. For those that are looking for a keynote speaker to come out, and I don't motivate for me, it's about transformation. It's like think about your favorite comedian. It's not because they tell jokes. It's because they tell you about life and they make you laugh. I do the same thing with my keynotes. I don't tell you what to do. I show you what happens if you don't take care of yourself. So you can find me. I always say, if you can't find me on social media, you're not trying. Right? And so to get a hold of me for conversations, for presentations, etc., go to RoderickJefferson.com. Right. You can find me on my website at RoderickJefferson.com, my YouTube, Roderick Jefferson, on Instagram, Roderick Jefferson. And if you want to know more, because I just gave you a little sliver of what actually happened while I was out, if you want to know more about the story itself, you can grab my new baby, my recently named as a bestseller by Amazon, and it's called Stroke of Success. You can simply go to RoderickJefferson.com, click on books, and hit that, and you can get a signed copy of Stroke of Success.
I love it, my brother. I love it. So hold on. Let's just make sure we got this, right? So RoderickJefferson.com, website. Go check my brother out. We'll put that up on the screen, right? Definitely. Where can they pick up the book? They can pick it up the website. Can they get it at Amazon?
On the website. Absolutely.
On the website.
Who knows what's going to happen. But if you come to RoderickJefferson.com, like I said, you will get a signed, and I don't just autograph it. I actually put in personal notes because it's that important to me. Back to that EQ thing. Right. And that's where you can get the book.
Awesome, buddy. And then definitely check out my brother's book. I'm sorry. Go ahead. What are you saying, Roger?
Okay, I was saying if you're looking for a consultant to help your company to drive more revenue consistently, go to RoderickJefferson.com. If you're
an
event
manager
and you want to see me, go to RoderickJefferson.com.
So listen, that's it. Just go to RoderickJefferson.com and whatever you need, my man, going to give it to you.
The sauce is right there.
Well, here's the thing. Well, look, to be fair, though, you threw some sauce on us today, my brother, and we really appreciate it. And look, I'm going to be selfish here. We would love to have you come back again and drop some more knowledge, right? Because there's more to, yes, your story is heartbreaking, but more importantly, it shows about overcoming. It shows about, you know, the ability to change. It shows about, you know, having another chance, right? And the four F's of family and all those things are beautiful, my brother. But you have been a very successful man, and you still are. See, that's where, you know, we didn't get into that, right? Because at the end of the day, you still thriving. You just not doing it like you used to do, okay? Absolutely. And so you can still get the Mercedes. You can steal all those things, right? You just got to take care of yourself, okay? And you got to stick with yourself. And that's the message that I got from you today. Don't change who you are. Focus on your purpose. But more importantly, as Chris used the term, and I'm going to say it here too, it's about self-care. So we want to thank you for coming on a Black Executive Perspective podcast, sharing your perspective. And then more importantly, we're definitely going to have you come back and drop some more knowledge with us in the future.
Thank you. I am truly honored and grateful and humble for the opportunity. And if I've been able to touch one, two people out there, as Mama would say, mission accomplished.
Thank you, Mama.
Right here.
Yeah, exactly. You touched us. There you go, bro. So you got is this double your pleasure, double your fun?
Right.
Quota has been met.
Exactly. That's right. You're going to get a royalty later on, too. Look at the man.
There you go.
All right. All right, guys.
People being happy.
Exactly. Right. So now I think it's time for
Tony's tidbit.
And the tidbit today, success without alignment is a slow form of self-destruction. If your climb costs you your health, your peace, or your people, you're not winning. You're just surviving in disguise. And you heard a lot of that from our brother, Roderick Jefferson, today.
Remember that A Black Executive Perspective is more than just one podcast. It's a growing network of conversations designed to challenge perspectives and expand understanding, like we did today. Be sure to check out Need to Know with Dr. Nasinga Burton, where Nasinga breaks down stories shaping our community, our culture, and the world that we live in. Check out Pull Up Speak Up, where bold voices come together for unfiltered conversations about issues people often are afraid to discuss. And then, of course, we want you to make sure you check out A Mixed Executive Perspective, where hosts Grace Food and Corey explores identity, leadership, belonging, and what it means to navigate a world through multiple lenses. Different shows, different perspectives, one mission, making uncomfortable conversations comfortable. And then we would be remiss if we did not leave you with our call to action. Our goal here is to eliminate all forms of discrimination. And to achieve this, we ask for everyone to embrace LESS less. The L stands for learn. Educate yourself on racial, cultural, medical, spiritual nuances, like my brother Roderick Jefferson.
Absolutely. Then after you learn, you have the letter E, which stands for empathy. Now, since you've learned, you could be more empathetic to your friends and colleagues because now you can put yourself in their shoes.
The first S stands for share. It doesn't matter if you can't bring it back to the village. Don't hide it, divide it. Share your insights and enlighten others.
And then the final S stands for stop. We want everyone to stop discrimination as it walks in your path. This is so easy, so simple. It's just like at the Sunday dinner table. If Aunt Jenny or Uncle Joe says something that's inappropriate, instead of sitting there giggling or with your mouth open, you say, Aunt Jenny, Uncle Joe, we don't believe that. We don't say that. And you stop it right there. So if everyone can incorporate less, L-E-S-S will build a more fair, more understanding world. And we'll all see the change that we want to see because less will become more.
We are on a meteoric rise and 2026 is our time. But go back and check out other things in the catalog from the past because I've been looking at that recently and been very impressed with us. So make sure you check that out. Be on the lookout for future episodes. But go to our website, sign up for our newsletter, A Monthly Perspective. It comes out and gives you the game inside the game, and you definitely want that. Leave us a review and let us know who you want us to talk to, what you want to hear about. But subscribe wherever you're listening to this podcast. And where can they find us, Tony?
My brother, you can find a Black Executive Perspective podcast on YouTube, Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow us on our social channels of LinkedIn, X, YouTube, TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram at A Black Exec. For our fabulous guests, social entrepreneur, keynote speaker, Roderick Jefferson. For the co-host with the most, my brother down in Dallas, Crispy Reed. I'm Tony Tidbit. We talked about it. We learned about it. We really appreciate Roger for coming on and sharing us about it. We love you. And guess what? We're out.
A Black Executive Perspective.